Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, issue number 40. I am
41.
41.
Sorry.
40, 41. That's right. Issue number 41. I am your host. With me is Ethan.
Hello.
Shay.
Hi.
And live from Buffalo is John.
Live from Buffalo. It's Saturday night.
Hello, hello. We decided to let John do this so he doesn't feel like we're only going to let him on for the Ruthaws and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, welcome once again. Good to always have you.
Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Good. As you may or may not know, this is a weekly GeekCast where we talk about all kinds of gaggles of geeky goodness. We have several rotating topics. This week we're going to be opening things up with a remake of Fantastic Four. Basically, we know that there is a Fantastic Four remake in the happenings, but what we would like to see come out of that movie. After that, we're going to be doing a top six of our favorite movie heroes. And then wrapping everything up, we're going to be doing a watch this on one of Ethan's favorite shows, Torchwood. But before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. I'll leave the floor up to you guys. What do you guys want to talk about first?
Well, you remember that publicity image of the X-Men that we talked about, X-Men First Class.
Yep.
Vaughn, what is his name?
Matthew Vaughn.
Matthew Vaughn. Basically released a statement saying that picture was not approved.
Right.
Not a pre-approved image, and even Fox is running around trying to figure out what the hell happened.
So, yeah. It isn't approved.
That it looked like shit.
He said that it isn't approved, but it is real, though.
Yeah.
So
somebody's cell phone, basically.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it looks like it had to have been photoshopped and had to have been done by somebody that actually has, access to their publicity stills.
At the same time, they released a bunch of high-res new images from the movie that obviously they look better. But
yeah, but not
the other one was just a bad Photoshop. It really was bad.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. It was pretty awful. They also released the poster.
Yeah, the poster looks cool. I like the poster.
It looks like the first X-Men poster with the School for the Gifted stuff around it.
And actually, I like that.
It's fine.
I think Magneto's helmet looks kind of dorky. But it's a play on the one of the helmets from the comics, I know.
Well, you know, the Ian McKellen helmet was too small.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one's maybe about the right size to a little bit too big. So I think it looks about the right size, really.
But it will be interesting.
We'll see.
See what happens, you know. We're not going to talk about that quite yet. We were, of course, Liam fucking Neeson was inducted into the facilitators of the Indomitable Order of the Zone of Ruthaws last week.
You're correct.
Or last issue. Some news on him is Liam Neeson is going to reprise his role as Qui-Gon Jinn from Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, on Cartoon Network, Star Wars The Clone Wars on January 28th and again on February 11th. He will be appearing in Obi-Wan Kenobi in Visions in a three-part arc across his former protege Anakin Skywalker's destiny as the Chosen One. So, kudos to Liam Neeson for coming out and doing that.
That doesn't make sense.
Hmm?
That doesn't make sense at all.
What?
Because if the Clone Wars takes place in between 2 and 3,
mm-hmm.
and Obi-Wan was all like what the fuck when Yoda said that he had talked to him, and if he had talked to him earlier, that doesn't really make any sense.
It says
right there in the release that he talked to
Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan Kenobi in Visions, in a three-part arc of
Visions, maybe.
Skywalker's destiny.
Could go ahead.
Flashbacks.
Yeah, maybe. Well, hopefully. We'll have to see, but it wouldn't make any sense if it was actually him appearing as a Force ghost. I mean, that'd be a major continuity issue.
It might be like when Luke got the messages.
It could just be like a dream sequence.
Yeah, something like that. Cool. Excellent.
Oh, and you remember that whole Wonder Woman?
I'm not happy about this.
Okay. Yeah, NBC has picked up the Wonder Woman series.
And they're talking to Mick G.
Yes, they're talking to Mick G to do the first episode.
Mick G? Who's Mick G?
The guy that directed the Charlie's Angels movies and Terminator Salvation.
I like Terminator Salvation.
I haven't seen it. I'm just saying he directed it.
I guess the Wonder Woman series is happening.
I want a Wonder Woman movie, not a TV show.
Yeah.
Do you want to see Wonder Woman?
So, You got any news, John?
I think we got a couple of what I've read, so.
Okay. What else we got?
Don Cheadle said that they are working on a script for a War Machine spinoff.
I'll believe it when I see it.
And he says they've hired a writer, but that's all he says.
Interesting. Doesn't seem like a very viable option.
I think it does.
Bits and pieces of news. Captain America the First Avenger will not be Captain America the First Avenger in Russia, South Korea, and the Ukraine.
What's he going to be over there?
The First Avenger.
Why not Captain America?
Because it didn't test well to possible audiences.
They'd rather just the First Avenger.
The Captain America icon is not that, recognizable. So.
Well, that and the bad guys, you know. I guess he's a Nazi, so.
Yeah, anywhere those guys.
So, cool. Yeah, who cares about fucking offending Nazis? Yeah. Ready for Avatar 2, huh?
James Cameron has announced the release dates for Avatar 2 and 3.
Okay, when's this?
Avatar 2 will come out Christmas 2014, and Avatar 3, which will be themed, which will be filmed at the same time, will be released Christmas 2015. So I'm thinking it's going to be a totally Matrix fuck up, Pirates of the Caribbean fuck up again. So you have a nice two-parter that feels like one long ass movie that really got chopped in two and has no point being out. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just sort of iffy about that whole thing.
I'm not particularly excited.
I'm like, oh, we gotta wait another 3 years, 2.5 years now.
We should do a remake it on that. Mm-hmm. Try and give some heads up. Do it this way.
I saw that. That fucking sucks.
Those of us who are big comic book nerds and we're really nerds in general, comic books and action figures, we all know about the magazines Wizard and Toy Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Both of which are going to cease publication in print.
No!
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking Wizard's been around, 20 years?
Yeah. Nearly 20 years after it was burst on the scene in 1991.
Damn.
Yeah. They have ceased publication. Ceased publication.
Is it just going to be online, or they're just not going to do it at all?
That's what I would guess. Generally, things like that go straight to an online subscription service, even. So.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Excuse me. Stay in the fucking van.
Have you guys seen the new Spider-Man set photos?
I'm looking at them right now.
Wow, that costume looks dumb.
It does. Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to be digitally enhanced or something.
It's got to be.
Either that, or it's going to be like beginning Spider-Man costume.
Well, they like to get them all beat up and dirty.
I would really think, though, that it's going to have to be, there's going to be some digital scrubbing on it, something like that.
Yeah, so. That doesn't look anything like the photo that was released. I mean, it looks way too bright. I mean, the other one.
And I also understand we're seeing it on set photo that someone's taken with a camera, so I mean, it's
like
not
a phone camera
process or anything like that in the film. So.
Did you see
the shot of the robot with the run down the side and stuff? I don't know. I like the little silver kind of borders he's got on around his feet.
Well, they make practical sense, but it looks like Spider-Man booties all over again.
Part of the explanation is he needs to have thinner feet.
Yeah, I spotted this article specifically for you.
What is it?
A scientist, I believe you said something about the Triceratops.
I did.
Said about on the show?
Yeah, that they said that they discovered that Triceratops never existed, that it was a juvenile version of a Torosaurus.
All right. Let me see if I can find this name. Andrew Park of the Raymond Alf Museum of Paleontology in Claremont, California, is shooting down that theory.
On what grounds?
On the grounds, basically it means the Triceratops, the Torosaurus, and the Nedoroceratops,
right,
are all distinct species because of cranial changes, otherwise unknown, in adolescence, that they've just been misidentified, and that this theory, it is a real dinosaur.
Okay.
And it's one of those things that I don't think we're ever going to really know.
Probably not. Not without a time machine.
The reason I brought it up
some Jurassic Park technology.
I spotted it, so.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Well, we got two huge news stories that we need to get going so we can actually get rocking on the show. First thing I want to talk about is famed, I guess we could call it, indie director Kevin Smith. He pulled a big old fuck you to distributors at the Sundance?
I think it was Sundance.
Yeah, the Sundance Film Festival. What he had done was he released, as you know, that the way Sundance works is people take movies that have not yet been picked up to be distributed, and they show them, and then distributors view them based off of interest around the festival about who wants to see what movies and stuff. And Kevin Smith is taking his new film Red State up there, and what he said was he was going to show the film, and then he was going to do an auction. And so he showed the film, and then he went up and he talked for 15-20 minutes, a very, very anti-establishment speech about, you know, fuck the studios for wasting money and that kind of thing, and, you know, we made this movie for, you know, for $3 million, and, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to turn around spending $20 million marketing it, and blah, 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 and he talked like that for like 20 minutes. And if you listen to Smodcast or any of his other shows, this is nothing new to you.
Right.
He's been talking this shit for like a year. And so what he did was he ended up opening up the, producer partner John Gordon opened up the auction, and Kevin Smith opened up the auction with a bid for $20, and they closed the auction, and he bought his movie with plans to distribute it himself.
Nice.
So what he's going to do is he's going to be four-walling it, something that they did back in the vaudeville days, where owners of a movie will go around to different theaters and buy up space for the weekend and sell tickets that way. And there's a big long list of theaters it's going to be going to over the next 10 months, because it's going to get a theatrical release in October 19th, I think, something like that. But he's going to be four-walling it from now until then, and there is going to be one playing in Kansas City.
Oh, nice.
At the Midland Theater. Problem is, the tickets are going to be like $80.
Yeah.
But he is doing a Q&A afterwards.
That's
so
cool.
I want to go. I really want to go.
If I can afford it, yeah.
Yeah, if I can afford it. It is March... March something. Tickets go on sale this Friday. I don't remember if it's $60 or $80. I would love to go. I probably won't be able to, but...
I won't have $60 or $80 this Friday to buy any, so...
Yeah, me neither. And I imagine it's going to sell out very quickly.
Yeah.
I'd pay $60 for one of his Q&As. John, you want to say something?
I had a chance to sit down and smoke talk with Hamilton Pena, and he's very engaging. I think all his own time was 2 hours he spoke to us. And it seemed like it was only like 10 minutes. You know, it was a lot of fun. It was one of the clips too, was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us a sneak peek of the film. He gave us like another little clip kind of teaser kind of thing. And he's a lot of fun. I highly recommend if you guys have a chance to go see him.
I'm going to try to work out my budget to make it happen. I mean, I know it's a lot of money, but A, I want to see the movie. I don't particularly feel like waiting 10 months to see it. And B, I would love to see one of his Q&As. So... that's why I want to do it. Now...
are we talking Oscar nominations at all?
We're going to talk Oscar nominations, but before we do that, I wanted to ask your opinion on what he's doing.
Oh, on what Kevin Smith is doing?
On the four-walling and the distribution.
I think it's an interesting gimmick, and I think it'll work for him based on his reputation. People, especially if he's doing Q&As there, I think people will go for it.
Oh, it's different news, but it's slightly related. He's announced that he will no longer be making movies after he does his next film, Hit Somebody. He will no longer be directing.
All right.
So,
good for him.
Yeah, I guess. Good for him.
I couldn't make it through Cop Out, so.
Yeah, well, Cop Out wasn't very good.
No, Cop Out was a piece of shit.
But he didn't write it.
I have a thing against crappy movies.
Yeah, you just don't particularly like them. I didn't mind it that much, but it also wasn't very good. So, it actually, believe it or not, it really pissed a lot of people off, because a lot of distributors would have been wasted their time going to see the movie if they knew he was going to pull that stunt. But that's exactly what it is. It's a publicity stunt.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Yep, they got us to talk about it.
Sure, yeah. Sure. All right, Oscar nominations.
Whew. Just want to list them, or what do you want to talk about?
How do we want to do this? I don't want to list them. That'll take fucking forever.
Name your winners.
Name my winners. Well, before I do that, Ethan and I both have personal thoughts on this, because there are two major snubbings.
Yep.
That actually, technically, there's three major snubbings that everybody's pissed off about. Mm-hmm. One of them I don't care about. The ones I care about are, well, the one that nobody cares about, we'll get it out of the way, is that Mila Kunis was not nominated for Black Swan.
For the support?
Yeah, supporting actor. I don't care.
I don't care about that.
I didn't see the movie, so I can't speak towards it.
I did see the movie, but I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the movie, but
sure.
I also recognize that the movie's not made for a guy like me, so.
Sure.
She was okay, you know, so was Natalie Portman, but, you know, yeah, again.
Who did get the nomination.
Yeah, who did get the nomination. I think the thing that annoyed me was well, one, they expanded the visual effects category to five movies instead of three.
Yep.
And Tron Legacy did not get a visual effects nomination.
Which makes no sense to
makes
me.
No fucking sense to me either.
I mean, I don't understand why Alice in Wonderland got it, and it didn't.
Yeah. Alice fucking Wonderland? Really? Hey, it's not the spot on this piece of shit?
It's not Ruth Oz. Yeah, that's just kind of fucked up, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that probably amongst the best effects I saw last
year. That's probably what pissed me off every year.
Sure, me too, so.
And yet I still watch them.
Me too.
Religiously.
The big one.
The big one is Christopher Nolan.
Snub for a directing Oscar.
What the fuck?
I think if that movie was nominated for any Oscar, it should have been for direction.
His direction is what made that movie. You know,
I just kind of wonder if he doesn't have a good relationship with his fellow directors. I mean, I just don't know at this point, because he got snubbed for The Dark Knight, he got snubbed for Memento, he got snubbed for this.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, he got snubbed for fucking the Magic movie. The Prestige. So, yeah, that was a great movie. It was a really good movie. Very good. I just cannot stress how much I don't like that. It is one of the most well-directed films I've seen in my life, let alone this year, and... Thoughts, John?
I think you and I talked about this privately. You know, Christopher Nolan, who's got that Hitchcock-esque filmmaking style director, he takes good chances with his movies. They're visually stunning, they're amazingly directed.
Mm-hmm.
And if Hitchcock is allowed to go with the technology, he'd be making the same kind of movies.
I agree.
And stories, the same kind of characters. And it's almost absurd that he's getting snubbed like this, because you think about his movies, and you say, well, he's been the Batman movies, and you think that's where he might get some stigma.
Yeah.
But the way those movies are done, the prestige, the amazement, it's really a slap in the face to him.
Yeah.
For not getting on the show.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's personal politics. A lot of people don't like specific people, and so they don't nominate them. And I just kind of wonder, maybe he's a jerk or something. But I don't care. It was just such a finely directed movie. I'm flabbergasted.
He doesn't play the politics.
He might not.
I mean, I know some actors do that, and they don't campaign. They don't do any of that crap. But,
mm-hmm.
Ed Norton's one of them.
Yeah. But he's been nominated twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got nominated for Primal Fear.
Recently.
He hasn't done anything that good recently.
Primal Fear and American History X?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, American History X is over 10 years old now.
Yeah. That's true. It came out when I was in high school.
Yeah.
But you know what? He deserved a nomination for Kingdom of Heaven. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. I thought he was great in that. Do you want to name off what we think's going to win?
I'd rather not.
That'd take forever. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll just post that on the site or something.
You mentioned you think True Grit really fucked everything up.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. What I'm saying is True Grit came out, I believe it was 2 days before the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get nary a nomination. What so fucking ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oscar time comes out and it gets 10 nominations. It's nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director, Best... And by the way, the most deserving nomination it got was
Supporting Actress.
The supporting actress, Hailee Steinfeld. She was awesome in that movie. I mean, she absolutely deserves that nomination.
I still need to see this. I need to see True Grit.
Great fucking movie, though. And, I'm not saying I think it fucked it up. I just think that it just displaced things.
Sure.
And, because, it didn't have shit for the Golden Globes, and it had 10 freaking Oscar nominations. I mean, that is a lot of nominations.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and, oh gosh, I was going to say, an interesting thing is, you know, it's the show show is being hosted by James Franco and Catwoman.
Hathaway.
James Franco's actually nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role. I think that's interesting. It's the first time anything like that's happened.
No, it isn't.
That a host has been nominated for?
It's happened before. Matter of fact, not only that, it was... Frank Capra was hosting. He was hosting, and he was nominated, and he was presenting, and he had to present an Oscar to himself.
Nice.
And so after that, they didn't do that anymore. So yeah.
And obviously it's another co-host sort of. I'm interested to see what they do with the show this year.
Yeah, a whole bunch of comic book movie actors are nominated. Did you notice that?
Yeah, Jeff Bridges, Franco, obviously.
Natalie Portman. Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, I saw he got another nomination for The Town. Mark Ruffalo. And Christian Bale again.
Yeah.
So really, in supporting role, three of the five are all from comic book movies.
Cool.
Or not specifically, but they're actors that have been in comic book movies. Or will be, really.
In the comic book sphere.
Cool.
Yeah, but... I'm interested to see what happens. I have a couple movies I need to try to watch at least before the Oscars now. Of the movies nominated.
Black Swan, The Fighter, Inception, The Kids Are Alright, The King's Speech, 127 Hours, Social Network, Toy Story 3, True Grit, and Winter's Bone.
Yeah, I've only seen two of those movies.
I've seen
Toy Story,
Inception,
mm-hmm.
The King's Speech, Social Network, Toy Story 3, True Grit, and Winter's Bone. So I've seen six of them.
Yeah. I want to at least try to see Social Network, Toy Story 3.
I cannot believe how good that movie was. It makes no sense for that movie.
Social Network?
Yeah, it makes no sense for that movie to
be as
good
as it is. Everyone's telling me that, and I'm like, okay, I guess I need to see it now. So...
It flabbergasted me how good that movie was.
It's Scott, isn't it?
No, it's fucking David Fincher.
One of those.
Yeah.
One of those. What did...
It looks really
Scott. Cool. Scott did Robin Hood this year.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that was enough for naught.
No.
So, any closing thoughts on this, John?
We're going to Inception after...
That's fucked up, though. I don't care. That's so fucked up. Mm-hmm. And why don't you close out the news with your sad little bit?
My sad little bit? Everyone needs to hang their head and say goodbye to Johnny Storm. Because in Fantastic Four 587, Johnny Storm is dying. It will no longer be the Fantastic Four. And 588, I believe, is the last issue of the Fantastic Four.
Will be the Fantastic Three after that?
Terrific Three, Fantastic Three, I don't know. They haven't said what they're doing with it after that, but Joe Quesada obviously is dancing around going, ha ha, I killed another one.
Why does he not like the Fantastic Four?
You know, he just likes killing people off. He's good at it.
They should do a Mr. Fantastic title of the Invisible Woman title and a Thing title.
Don't know. I believe the Thing is still a part of the New Avengers, which is awesome, but... Fantastic Four in 587 Casualty, he dies. Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, is to die. It was sort of broken by the Associated Press. So I'm wearing my Fantastic Four shirt in memoriam. And this is the segue into our We Make It.
Yeah. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with a We Make It on the Fantastic Four movie. Stay tuned. And we are back with the We Make It on Fantastic Four. As we all know, there has already been two Fantastic Four films, both directed by Tim Story. As we also know, this is a franchise that is getting a reboot. So we have decided to open up the discussion of We Make It Fantastic Four. What would need to happen in a Fantastic Four movie? I'm going to hand this off to Ethan's expertise of the Fantastic Four, because I can name all the characters, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess opening it up, Ethan, What went wrong with the first two? I know you liked them.
First of all, I'll say that I did enjoy those movies.
I know you did.
I am also horribly biased to like the Fantastic Four.
Correct.
I think the key thing to a Fantastic Four movie is the family aspect.
They got that all right.
They did get that all right. But I think what people really didn't like was sort of the two-dimensional aspect that they put to it. Where
wasn't epic enough? Wasn't enough
it
scope?
Wasn't epic enough, because the thing about the Fantastic Four is how cosmic they are.
Right.
They're not dealing with, you know, they generally don't deal with Skippy the bank robber down the street. They
right.
deal with Galactus. They deal with, you know, the other Earth in orbit. They deal with his herald, Galactus's heralds coming down. They deal with the
Dr. Fucking Doom.
Dr. Fucking Doom. This worldwide stuff. This, I mean, they deal with the big stuff. Angelus, the N, or what is the inverse?
Martin
no, it's, I think it's his is the inverse.
The inverse. No, Nigga, sure. No, it's not Nigga.
It's something like, it's where Angelus is from.
Yeah.
In space. That's it. In space, I think. Anyway. Do you remember, John?
No.
No? Okay. But I think that's what they could do fairly well. If rebooting the franchise, I think they did some things right with the new series.
I think they got half the casting good.
Yeah. I thought they did great with
Chiklis, and Chiklis, I think they did
good. And Evans.
I agree with that.
But obviously they won't have Evans this time.
Probably not.
They won't have any of them this time, sadly.
Probably.
I mean, it's no secret that at least two of the three people here at this table are like, Michael Chiklis as the Thing was perfect casting and awesome and wonderful, and we love it.
Yeah.
I cast somebody else, didn't you?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
Yeah, you cast Eccleston.
Christopher
Eccleston. Right.
Anyway, I anticipate if we were producers given this movie, I think obviously we'd want to sort of separate from the first two movies and sort of do a new thing.
Okay.
Me being biased, I would want Chiklis back, but if we can't get him...
We're just going to say that we can't get him.
Right. I mean, obviously, recast all the parts.
I don't want to talk casting.
Yeah, I know.
A, we've done that already.
We have done that already. And really, I think playing off Doom as the villain is probably a good idea.
I want Doom in it.
Because really having, sort of redoing the first story, having it be the Mole Men, I don't think would work well as in a film. You could work that into sort of Dr. Doom sort of instigating it, because I think Dr. Doom needs to be more a Machiavellian bad guy, you know, back in the shadows doing his thing, because he's Doom.
With that Roman edge, too.
Yeah.
Minions.
It seems more, you know, like the last two version of Doom.
I didn't mind Julian McMahon as Doom, but
he became so much better.
Doom needed to be bigger, and Doom needed to be, I mean, he needed to have this ego you could see coming around the fucking corner. And it's like, he is not Doom's like, well, I think I'm awesome. No, Doom knows he's awesome.
Yeah, he doesn't say that, because he is awesome.
It's like, I am Doom, that is all he needs to say, you know? It's like,
you're evil.
It's even beyond that. It's the, I am better than you because I know it. Type of thing, and he just doesn't have to even say it.
And 99% of the time, he's right.
Yeah.
Well, we have to really get the rivalry between Reed and Doom.
Yeah.
Because Doom, I think he's all that, but he still has that little bit of ego where he needs to show up Reed.
Right.
And I do think that Reed is smarter than him. I mean, but he's also got the, you know, social skills of a fucking shoe. But Doom is a very charismatic dude, and he's very, very, very socially good. I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
Joint.
Yeah.
Did you guys like the Fantastic Four movies?
I enjoyed them. I think I saw them in theaters. I've only seen them once. I did, you know, like you guys said, they got the family aspect correct, but they didn't really get anything else. You know, they didn't know anything else. And yeah, Chiklis was great with the voice of the Thing, you know? Whoever loved the Blue-Eyed King, you know, he definitely brought it. But everything else, I think, kind of fell there.
Kind of fell flat, yeah.
Yeah. And see, I was thinking about this before tonight, and I was trying to think of what went wrong with the Fantastic Four movies, and I was thinking it was scope. I mean, I was thinking, I was wondering if I was wrong because because I know that they do have that family aspect, and that's a story that can stay small. But at the same time, you know, you're right. I mean, Doom is larger than life.
Right.
I mean, Doom is the smallest scope they deal with.
Scope is the thing about the Fantastic Four is that you have. I mean, they're worldwide emergencies. They're big things.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're the cosmic family. You know, I mean, they were made by cosmic rays. So I mean, they're dealing with. They deal with the outer space, inner space stuff. I mean, they deal with heavy science, because that's what Reed is all about.
What kind of... John, who would you like to see direct a movie like this? Who do you think could handle the scope of this?
Well, it's hard to say, because we need somebody who can really hit... It's really tough, because we have to have that family aspect, but it needs to be a little more out there. And I think that's one of the things, is they kind of bend everything down in the Fantastic Four.
Right.
Made it more of a family comedy and buddy flick.
And you really need somebody. You need somebody that's both technically adept, and you need somebody that's good with actors.
And you need a good script.
And you need a good script. That I mean, obviously, we're going to get a good script.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that you need to get somebody like George Lucas to direct. I mean, who is very technically adept, but he's horrible with actors.
Yeah.
And then you have actors or directors like David Lynch, who's fucking awesome with that'd be so weird, a Fantastic. But like David Lynch, who's very good with actors, but just not technically adept. So it'd be hard to find that.
Mm-hmm. You gotta find an amalgam of all these different actors, all these different directors.
Yeah.
Right.
That guy who made the next
Robert
Rodriguez.
Yeah.
He's not that good with actors. He's okay with them, but.
And it's more like slapsticky kind of action kind of stuff, you know, over the top stuff. You want to see, you'd never see it, but someone who's got the, like Spielberg.
Right. I was actually kind of thinking that.
Worked with actors, who's got, the directing know-how, the computer know-how. What's his name from, you want to meet somebody like,
Cameron, I was thinking him too. You know what? Cameron was actually attached to this at one point. Remember that?
No, he was more attached to Spider-Man.
I know he was attached to both, I think. Sorry, John, I cut you off. I didn't realize that.
Cameron could bring an awesome-looking, computerized thing and have Mr. Fantastic look fantastic, being, huge or bad, or making his fist giant. You're never going to see those guys do it, and you're never going to have the right story. And we kind of want to say, we got our Fantastic Four movies. I don't know if we need a reset, because I think they're almost too hard to do to nail for the movies.
I think they can be done, but damn if I can't think of somebody that should do it.
Yeah, I'm sort of there, and I think they can be done, but it's going to be hard as hell to get it right.
I mean, you would need somebody like Nolan, but A, that doesn't work because he's doing Batman, and B, I don't see him being interested in it.
Yeah.
Because he's done his comic book movie.
Yeah, and it's too fantastic. It's too fantastical.
Yeah. It's so upbeat. Everything's positive and industry.
Do you know who could actually direct this movie? Catherine Bigelow. She is fucking awesome at technical stuff, and she is great with actors. I can see that now that I've said it. What?
What is she making?
The Hurt Locker. The Hurt Locker. She just won an Oscar for it.
Great. Yeah. So, really...
Right.
Excuse me?
We're going to go to Steve Williams?
Yeah.
We're going to get Bobo Baggins as Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, I'll kill him. I'm not a fan. Bilbo? Ian Holm?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Elijah Wood. Yeah, I hate Elijah Wood.
Frodo,
okay.
Yeah, no, he's not Mr. Fantastic.
Okay, yeah, something that I definitely wanted to point out is I know that we've never done a We Make It Spider-Man, but I've said time and time again that I don't want to see the Green Goblin redone. I don't want, because I liked Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin. I thought he was done well. I do want to see Doom done again. I do.
Doom needs to be regal and evil.
I still 100% say Richard Roxburgh. I have not changed my mind on that.
That's
awesome.
Who we both cast as him.
But, you know, that was like a year ago. Yeah. So we might have. But no, I'm still 100% there.
So I think ultimately, if you're going to do a movie on the Fantastic Four, you need to focus on. It needs to be a family story.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be a tight story, or else it's just going to be slapsticky and just too zany. You know?
What's stupid about that is you have your elements like Johnny Storm, like Ben Grimm, that'll give you that comedy without making the whole fucking thing the Bozo Show.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't understand why they couldn't handle that.
And that pushes into that family aspect of something. Right. You don't need any other slapsticky comedy. And it should be a little more, it should be more serious with those two playing off each other as the comedy.
And that was easily my favorite parts of these two movies, was those two back and forth.
Right.
You know, I loved it when the thing balled up his car and threw it at him. I mean, that shit cracked me up. That was funny. You know, I liked it when he crushed his thing doll up against the wall. I mean, I enjoyed that back and forth. I thought it was great. But the whole movie was like that when it didn't need to be. I mean, you remember the montage when they were locked up in the tower and they were doing the shit like shaving and reaching for the toilet paper and him walking in on Sue and her turning? That was so... That took me out of the movie, and I'm like, this movie's stupid. I mean, I just...
Mm-hmm. They could come out of sort of left field and do something that they don't really do in the Fantastic Four comic books and have a Shi'ar invasion sort of tied in all the closer to the X-Men histories.
I don't think they could do that. I don't know. Do you think the Shi'ar falls under the Fox umbrella? Doesn't matter. Fantastic Four is Fox anyway, isn't it?
Fox anyway, yeah.
Oh, okay. My bad. Huh, who knows?
Shades of the X-Men and also massive celestial phenomena.
I just, it's a difficult movie to do.
I know it can be done right.
I don't want to, and if they do a right proper trilogy, I don't want to see Sue and Reed in love with each other at first. They're like, yeah, we kind of had a fling in college, and we really care about each other, but we're really scientists, and Sue's...
That's what they did in the first movie.
No, I want it to be even less, but like the last scene of the movie, they kind of like get like the idea that they get together, and that's the focus of the story.
A rule of a trilogy is you never make the first movie assuming it's going to be a trilogy.
Right, no,
never.
Maybe a poignant, understood moment where you're just like, oh yeah, and there's where they fell back in love with each other. End of story. And then you can make the focus of the next one, and then like the childbirth could be the focus of the third one, because they have to go to Annihilus and get the negative matter or whatever.
I want Doom.
To have children.
I want Doom. I want Galactus.
I want a good Galactus. Yeah.
I kind of like.
If you're making it into a trilogy, you know, it's Doom, probably Annihilus, and then Galactus, or Doom and Silver Surfer and Galactus.
Would you bring in the Watcher?
Yes.
The
Watcher is such a fundamental part of the Fantastic Four.
Right.
Really, there's so many aspects of Fantastic Four that they could explore. Some great stuff with the Inhumans.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much that they could explore. But the problem is that it's such a cosmic story. And that it's and you're coming down to it, it's the scope. You have to have this sort of broad, and they tried it with the second movie. They tried it.
But they
I liked the second movie.
They fucked it up, though. Because, I mean, it was great that Galactus was coming to eat him. That was awesome. But it was all on Earth, and that wasn't the scope that you're looking for.
People that like the Nova Corps and just show up and
I didn't
message
like it.
For Reed.
Yeah.
Reed, this is from the Nova Corps. And you're like, whoa, who did, what, what's going on?
And truth be told, I think it could be done well. I'd like to see it done well.
Yeah.
And, I'm also understanding what John's saying, is we do have our Fantastic Four movies. I would actually kind of like to see other properties explored first.
Mm-hmm.
Give, like, you know, Doctor Strange a chance to shine. Go ahead, John.
Well, what would be interesting is maybe take more of a storybook adventure from the Watcher's point of view.
That would be cool.
Then you can have those very fancy, out there kind of elements, because it's almost like a child's story being told, you know? You can have those giants that are the Galactuses.
Mm-hmm.
It's told that way.
The Galactus, the Externals, Eternity, I mean, that stuff's all Fantastic Four, all Jack Kirby stuff, you know?
if you have as many of these stories told, it's a storybook adventure up there through the watcher's eyes. I mean, you know, anything on the kind of a way.
Okay, as producers, I'm going to make an unprecedented move. I'm going to get us fired, but I'm moving this back to Marvel.
I'm moving it back to Marvel Studios.
I'm moving it back to Marvel Studios, and we are going to start planting seeds in shit like Thor. I mean, not Thor; it's already made, but just like, you know, stuff like that, the Avengers, stuff like that, that's leading up to this bigger thing. Because I do think that if you make a Fantastic Four movie and then you open it up with Galactus, people are going to be just reeling, and it's too small of a story to fit into a single movie.
Sure.
And at the same time, We don't have the luxury of assuming this is going to be a trilogy.
Yeah.
So I'm taking it back. I'm going to get probably assassinated, but I'm taking it back to Marvel Studios. I'm going to start planting the seeds in the Avengers and the Iron Man 2, I mean the War Machine movie and shit like that, to where it doesn't come out of left field when Galactus is, you know, scene one, shot one of the Fantastic Four reboot.
There could be shots of Silver Surfer watching Earth and these other movies.
Yeah, see, that's fine.
Oh, really, not even Silver Surfer. The Watcher watching.
Yeah.
You know, they could plant a lot of seeds in that way, and I think it'd be very cool. Or, you know, it's little things that they could do. You know, it's like they're the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys are all talking. It's like
I can't think of this out. Did you ask Richards? Did you ask Reed yet? No, God damn it! We need to learn how to fix problems without him.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Back to Marvel Studios.
Yeah.
Back to Marvel Studios, so you could, because really the Fantastic Four, and Reed Richards especially, is such a fundamental element of the Marvel Universe.
And you know, John, that might be a reason why this movie is going to happen, whether we like it or not, because Fox does not let go of properties.
Yeah, they don't want to let go.
Why would you?
I wouldn't.
Got that. You said Sony. Sony doesn't want to let go of Spider-Man.
Fuck, why would they? You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Well, is that Spider-Man 2 is like one of the top grossing films of all time?
So is Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Fuck, Spider-Man 1, all three of them were.
Yeah.
They probably made $1 billion out of that trilogy, if not more,
easily.
They probably had a quarter of that for the rights for it.
Yeah, probably. And you know what? You know,
Marvel sued them for...
Wouldn't it be cool to see Disney buy it back from them?
Mm-hmm.
If anybody had the monetary capital to do it would be Disney.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be like, you know what, here's $1 billion, and if you're not going to do it, we're going to sue you, and we can outspend you. Why don't we just make this friendly, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe throw them a piece.
We just bought the city that your offices are in. So here's your eviction notice.
Yeah.
Now,
I like to see movies handled by as many studios as possible, but Fox just isn't doing that good of a job. And so I want it to go back to Marvel. Marvel, for the most part, has been doing a good job.
Fox is sort of leans toward the comedy, sitcom-y kind of stuff.
Well, the X-Men movies are Fox, and those weren't sitcom-y.
That's true. That's true.
So,
yeah, I mean, so they can do a good ensemble. So, I mean, maybe Bryan Singer's a guy you can look at to do the movie.
Maybe.
You know, it's...
But he already fucked up Superman for us, so he's not working for me again.
I had such philosophical disagreements that they betrayed the Superman, but I think they did a really good job.
We've covered that on a show before.
Yeah,
Any more thoughts on this, John?
You know, when I said Bryan Singer, I think he might be able to do a good job. But, you know, the only reason they got a shit Superman is because he was more of a fan of the movies than he was the comic book. You know, he wanted to make another installment of those movies. If he did what he did with X-Men, and just watched, you know, read the comic books, watched the cartoons, you get a good feel of what they're at, and he's a guy who could bring it.
Yeah. I don't completely hate the idea. I'm just terrified that we'd get another Superman. And, you know, hopefully we wouldn't. So.
I think he'd learn his lesson in that.
Well, I hope so.
His dad is not in the lead, so he wants to be another X-Men movie.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that. That'd be cool. But yeah, throw him the Fantastic Four. I can deal with that. I
mean,
he's technically adept, and he's also very, and he's good with actors, so.
Cool. Yeah.
He's a story driven kind of guy.
He sure is.
Excellent.
Alright, do we got anything else?
Nope.
Alright, let's wrap this bitch up and move on to our top 6 favorite movie heroes. We'll be right back. And we are back with our top six segment. This time around, we decided that we are going to be doing a top six movie heroes. I approach this as an antithesis to our long time ago top six movie villains. I believe that was up on maybe nine?
Something like
nine,
that.
Nine, 11? Yeah, it's like way a long time ago. I'm actually surprised it took us this long to do it, but hey, we're finally getting around to it. Why don't we just open this shit up? Ethan, who's your number six?
I approached it much the same way, actually, and sort of looked at...
this isn't a direct antithesis, though. I want to point that out. But, you know, my number six was... my number six villain was fucking... what's his face? Christopher Lee and the Three Musketeers. My hero is not D'Artagnan, but, you know, right. It's not a direct antithesis.
I'm going to go with my gut instinct on my number six, and that is Harry Callahan, Dirty Harry. Talk about an icon of his time, and also played by Clint fucking Eastwood.
Groovy.
You know, first came around in the early 70s as early examples of the anti-hero. And I think he came out, he was obviously a conflicted character, had a righteous streak, and didn't play by the rules, and really sort of influenced movies from that point on, as far as, you know, especially with cop movies.
Sure.
I mean, without Dirty Harry,
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon,
Die Hard,
any of that stuff.
No.
Eastwood plays him so well and so likable. I mean,
was there five of those?
Five movies, five Dirty Harry flicks, plus a video game. And, you know, just really Clint fucking Eastwood and Dirty Harry. If you've seen any of the Dirty Harry movies, you gotta just, I mean, the guys, he played the character through the 70s and through the 80s and let him go with the times, you know? And,
yep.
Fuck, man. Dirty Harry all the way.
Groovy. Which one of you two wants to go next?
You want to go, John?
No, we can go, John.
As I said last time, I put... his name is slipping my mind right now, but Jack...
Jack
Burton from Big Trouble Little China. He's just so cool.
And the Pork Chop Express.
Well, he's a pretty...
Played by another Ruth Oz member as well, oddly, Kurt fucking Russell. Yeah.
Badass.
He's a badass already, and then he finds something that's just out of, like, fistfights and bars kind of affair, and stands up, drinks potion.
All I can say is son of a bitch must pay.
Awesome.
Cool. John, what's your number six, or who's your number six?
Number six is actually a duo. It's Roger and Peter from Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, he's sweet.
These guys kick the most zombie ass in any zombie movie. If it's driving a truck through these guys, or just blowing the hell out of some crazy bikers who break into their mall, these guys just rip, roar, and destroy it. And they're pretty badass in the beginning. In jumpsuits, and then Peter is kicking ass in a red coat, just shooting the heads off of zombies.
You're talking the original, correct?
Yeah, definitely the original.
Okay.
Peter kicked some ass in the remake, but these guys have it nailed as the zombie killers of any zombie movie.
Definitely. My number six is one that is from a movie that we have talked a little bit about on this show before, but not a whole hell of a lot, and especially not enough of how much I like it. I chose Wesley from The Princess Bride. Just your archetypical, prototypical, swashbuckling badass hero, who is also a smartass. And the badass Dread Pirate Roberts as well. So I really enjoyed him. I think it's a great movie, and he's a lot of fun, and I just picked him because I like that swashbuckler attitude.
He was on and off my list because I got called by Ian this afternoon and said, hey, do you want to do this? So I was kind of lightning feeling my head for the whole day.
Yeah. I've been doing that too. Because I have one that's interchangeable on my list if it comes up before. Because this was such an easy fucking list to do, but it was so hard to pick who that went on it. I mean, there were just dozens of them that could have fit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure that it should be posted sometime this week. It's funny because we've been in our top five favorite comic villains, And then we each have our guilty pleasure game. And one guy was on Paul. His was the guy that kidnapped the girl from Princess Bride. I think that was Vincini.
Vincini.
Inconceivable.
I don't think
keeps saying the word. I don't think it means what you think it means. Great line. Great movie. Ethan, what's your number five?
Oh, it's no surprise that he's going to show up on my list.
But it is.
Dirty Harry wasn't a surprise he was going to show up on your list.
Fucking Dirty Harry.
I know.
And this one is another one. It's fucking Ash.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell, Ash, from The Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness.
Who?
Bruce fucking Campbell.
Thank you
very much.
All right.
Another Ruth Oz nominee and winner.
Wasn't a nominee. He was just a winner.
He was true. He was nominated for 0.3 of a second before he was...
Well, or 10 years, depending on how you want to look at it.
That's true. But Bruce fucking Campbell is
fucking Williams.
Ash fucking Williams. Really, you can make the argument that John McClane is the king of pain. But yes, John McClane has the ever loving crap beat out of him in every movie. But does he ever saw off his own hand with a chainsaw?
No, sir.
I think that alone wins Ash the king of pain moniker because he does such thing, and then he just wraps it up, and he's good. Then he puts his hand in a coffee can, like, oh, bitch, that's right.
Yeah, I love me some Ash. And I want to point out, I built this list off of the strength of I was hoping I was grabbing ones that Ethan didn't, because I think I'm going to know 3/4 of his list pretty easily. So we'll see.
I might surprise you.
I know I'm going to surprise you, because I just grab all kinds of them. Shay, number 5.
Ripley from
Ellen Ripley.
Ellen Ripley, good, strong, well, really one of the first strong female heroines that ever hit films. And she's, anyone who doesn't say she's, anyone who says she's not a badass, obviously hasn't seen that movie.
Yeah, nominated for an Oscar for Aliens.
Goddamn right, yeah.
That was awesome.
I'll freely admit that she could kick my ass.
Yep.
And I would kick ass in this moment of the film.
True that.
Yeah, that's true.
All the way through. I mean, I
ignore the fourth movie, but that's fine. Yeah.
That fourth movie, because it's just a little... It's funny. To a certain extent.
No, it's just crappy. Yeah.
That's right.
It's, yeah.
John, who's your number 5?
My number 5 is Leon from The Professional.
Good one.
He's going to just take out some crooked pops. It's Leon, you know?
Nope. He is badass. Jean Reno.
I just wonder, his kids having, like, just, with rubber band guns, and he used to have this huge blowout fights with them, and it was always, just reminding me of that, because we used to go through my basement, and all these corners to hide in, to pop out, and just unload on people, and...
Nice.
And that's how I make my list.
Cool. Very good. Ethan, number 4. My number 5? Right. This is kind of a duo also, but it's the same character, but I actually like 2 different iterations of him. I am picking Abraham Van Helsing. I like both the Peter Cushing one, and I like the Anthony Hopkins one from Bram Stoker's Crapula. But I liked Anthony Hopkins a lot in that movie. The movie wasn't very good. He was a badass. But
I believe the best way to say it, Anthony Hopkins in that was he was Mage.
Yep.
Totally Mage.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
He was. I love that character. He's just one of those characters. I like the Van Helsing movie
forever, but I do remember I really liked Anthony Hopkins in it.
He was,
and Gary Oldman obviously.
Yeah. It wasn't a good movie, but he was good.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Oldman was good. Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder fucked it up, but other than that, pretty good. So cool. Yeah, that's my number 5. I'm sticking to it. Ethan, what's your number 4?
Oh, my number 4, pulling it off my list, which just closed for some random reason. I have to reboot it. My number 4, I'm sort of going iconic for me, and really one of my favorite heroes. Again, it's not going to be a big surprise to anybody. It's James Bond.
I mean, yet another one I left off my list.
Because you knew it'd be on mine.
I knew it'd be on somebody's, definitely.
It's James Bond. Oh, I mean, we're talking, 21 films now?
22, isn't it?
22, 21, a fuckload of movies.
Yeah, more than one.
Yes, more than one, less than a million.
Yep.
But it's James Bond. I mean, talk about an iconic hero from 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, today. I mean, the guy's been around for 50 years at this point. The character has been, and people still love him. People still identify with him. People still go, yeah, I know James Bond. I mean, James Bond, he is a badass, especially the Daniel Craig version. Very much a badass.
you know, I remember back in the day when, I mean, it's a recent development where you have heroes in movies that are just, I am a supreme badass. James Bond is always a supreme badass.
He's unstoppable.
He was always, I'm confident in my abilities and I'm going to kick some ass. And so, I mean, pioneer of that, James Bond, right there.
You got to love him. You absolutely got to love him.
Nice.
Cool.
My number four is Red Sonja. Are you noticing a theme?
They all suck. What?
It's just the ones to buy them.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, so he just grabbed a bunch of chicks. Bunch of chicks. I hated that fucking movie.
All right, John.
Wow. John, pull us out of the gutter.
My number four was Ash, but I got an alternate, and it's Chief Brody from Jab.
Hell yeah.
Well,
smiling, son of a bitch.
He's a little whiny in the beginning. Get out of the water! But at the end, he fucks the shit out of that shark.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
We're going to need a bigger boat. I love it. I always want to throw Quint in there, you know.
I love me some Jaws.
I almost threw Quint in there, but I didn't.
Cool. We're getting up to its 35th anniversary for Jaws now.
Jesus Christ.
I do believe it's supposed to be coming out on Blu-ray this year.
Badass. Rumor. I love that movie so much.
Because it's the 35th anniversary.
Cool.
Fucking A, man. Fucking A.
Yeah. So, my number four is...
You're jumping around today.
I am. I'm just not in it at all. My number two is actually another duo, because I can't pick one or the other. I picked Eddie Valiant and Roger Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Love that movie. I love both those characters. I mean, they don't work as well by themselves as they work off of each other, and I've always been a huge fan of that movie. So, they're my number four.
It's like a cop movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird ass buddy cop movie, but it's a buddy cop movie.
It is. It's a great movie.
I love that movie. It's so much fun.
Another one's 20 years old now.
It's got to be older than that.
Came out, what, 88?
So that'd be 22 years
22,
old.
22, 23 years old.
I remember something like that. The Dollar Theater when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Matter of fact.
Cinema Twin.
Yeah.
Wow. That brings back some memories.
Well, anyway, my number three.
Yes, sir.
Again, will not come as a surprise, but it is the incomparable James Bond of his era, Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yet another one. Talk I left off my list because of you.
A guy who fails, but fails spectacularly. And that's sort of the key thing with Indiana.
He's a superhero that fails.
Yes,
and I love it.
He's a superhero that fails, but still pulls it all off. And he's not super confident in his abilities, but he's going to go do the right thing.
Yep.
And talk about two-fisted, two-fisted archaeologist Han Solo action, you know. I mean, you got two-fisted Han Solo right there in a fedora. You gotta love Harrison Ford, you know. I mean, he took that character and literally made it a cultural icon of, you know, I mean, I'm talking cultural icons, but that's what it is, you know. Indiana Jones.
I gotta love it. All right, Shay, number three.
Pink Arrow.
Why are we friends with Shay?
I don't know.
Wow. Lori Petty, huh?
Yeah.
I like that movie.
I don't.
She's a badass. This is kick your ass is what she in that movie. She's an excellent badass. And
if you're going to female badasses, I would have gone with Sarah Connor. But, you know,
me too.
She could kick my ass. Totally.
I would totally let her kick my
ass.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. So, John.
Yeah, once again, pull it out of them.
I thought I would, because mine is Bill Munchausen.
I love that movie!
yeah. I do too. It's the only kind of fantasy movie character that really hits it home for me. I love Terry Gilliam films.
It's great.
This was my second introduction at the Time Bandits, which I love to put all the Levi's from Time Bandits in there, but I
dude, Time Bandits is awesome, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Don't touch it. It's evil. Come on.
It's Brazil and Baron Munchausen.
I love Brazil.
Yeah. Brazil's a little harsher, but still.
I love Brazil.
Baron Munchausen is just like...
Baron Munchausen's a great storybook, fairy tale movie. And he's a great protagonist too. I mean, he's
the cool of the movie.
And Aphrodite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He picks himself and his horse out of the water by his own hair. I mean, really, come on.
It's amazing.
John Neville.
John Neville, thank
That's
you.
Right. I love it. I love that movie. I like Terry Gilliam movies a lot. All right, my number three is the only one I left on my list, and I think that there's much of a chance of it being on anybody's list. But I left him on there because I like him so much. Han Solo from this New Hope, from The Empire Strikes Back, from Return of the Jedi. I mean, I wanted to throw me, like, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi or somebody like that on there, but A, that's very expected of me, and B, I like Han Solo better. I mean, he's a badass. He doesn't have the Force. He doesn't have a lightsaber, and he gets to fuck the princess in the end. I mean, you gotta love it. I mean,
sounds like our hero.
Yeah, that's my kind of hero right there. And Harrison fucking Ford. Harrison all the way.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all righty.
I think he's definitely up for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are we at? My number two?
Three.
Two.
Not two.
Two?
Mm-hmm. We're down to two. Did you get skipped? You didn't get skipped. You just went with...
that's right. I have an extra one.
Okay, then. Well, my number two... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my number two, sort of getting the ones that I don't think you're going to expect me to go for, Sam Spade.
Sweet. I almost threw him in there.
The Maltese Falcon.
I almost threw him in there.
Talk about your quintessential private eye, your quintessential, you know, film noir character. I almost went with Rick from Casablanca, but I was like, you know,
I almost
Sam Spade.
I left him off of there because my last two are some of the older characters on my list, and I didn't want to be all iconic about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, truth be told, I've seen these movies, like, you know, recently, like, well, in the last 30 years since I've been born, but, you know, I never knew a time without some of these characters,
yeah.
and a lot of these shaped who I am as a movie watcher, so I had to get some of these people on there.
Yeah, Sam Spade.
I love Sam Spade.
Incomparable Humphrey Bogart.
Yep. I love him. I love that movie so much.
That's a great
Peter Lorre was amazing.
Blu-ray?
I don't know. It should be if it is. I know Casablanca is.
Yeah, I know that.
So, cool. Shay.
The Bride, played by Uma Thurman. That Kill Bill series was phenomenal. She was
I like those movies a lot.
Murderizing like
Pez.
Hundreds of people and just in a row, and they're all bad badasses of their own.
Bonus points. What's her real name?
Uma Thurman's?
Yeah, The Bride.
Oh, I didn't know that she didn't have a real name.
Beatrix Kiddo.
Mm-hmm. Beatrix Kiddo.
Yeah.
I knew that, but I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, Beatrix Kiddo. Sweet. John.
He's out of the list, but he needs to be higher than number six, and it's Jack Burton.
Jack Burton!
Of course, the voting for Kurt Russell, of course, is going to be higher up on my list. And I absolutely love that movie. I go back to it all the time just to watch it. I used to get yelled at as a child for throwing my crest of life around the house. And then reflexes, so...
it's on the reflexes!
It's actually talking about himself in a third person.
Yeah.
And what he's talking about, so... Yeah, it's good.
Cool. Well, excellent. We've had a lot of icons on this list.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to grab the... is that right? Yep. I'm going to grab the very, 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 very first film icon ever. It is The Little Tramp, starting in the Kid Auto Races at Venice, ending in the modern times. Obviously, the incomparable Charlie Chaplin.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite characters of all time. I mean, I wish they had cryogenics or time machines or smelling salts to bring Charlie Chaplin back, because I want
more. You know who owns the rights to The Tramp?
Who?
IBM.
Oh, shit.
I need Charlie to buy it. Chaplin sold the rights to IBM in the 80s, and they used it as a
no, he
as
didn't.
A logo. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. He died in 1977.
Oh, I'm sorry. His estate sold it.
Okay, in the 80s. He didn't. He died in 1977.
His estate sold it in the 80s, and IBM used it for a short time as a logo, and they still have the rights to it.
I am going to buy IBM so I can do that. Yeah. I absolutely love that character. I have literally seen every one of his movies. I think there's 42 of them,
mm-hmm.
and I love them. I love Charlie Chaplin
right.
movies.
I just watched Modern Times the other day.
Isn't that
great
a fantastic
film.
Movie?
Film.
One of the best ending sequences of a film ever, him walking mm-hmm. off into the sunset. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it so much.
Yep.
The quintessential hero of the downtrodden, especially from the Depression era,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin's quote about the little tramp: the pathos lies in the tramp's hope for a more permanent transformation through love and his failure to achieve his. I love it. I mean, it just, I love the character so much. I love those movies.
All right, do we have any honorable mentions?
No, I don't have it. Pretty much all of yours, pretty much for the most part.
I would
say
Jack Burton and Ellen Ripley.
I'd say all yours.
You know.
Yeah, I didn't do John McClane.
Well,
we're going to do our number one.
Yeah, we're about to start our number one. So
yeah, we usually hit those.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. You know.
Anything from you, John?
Blondie from the Man of No Name trilogy.
Yeah,
love him. Mm-hmm. Or the Man of No Name, whatever you want to call him.
No Name. Yeah,
he just calls him Blondie.
Is that
sweet?
Well, my number one. You and I were thinking along the same lines, but mine is Zorro.
Yeah,
Douglas Fairbanks really became famous from Douglas Fairbanks and on with Guy Williams and others. Obviously, up to most recently Antonio Banderas. But talk about the first masked superhero on, yep, you know, on film. You know, you have El Zorro, and I have fond memories of watching the Guy Williams series on Disney, Disney Channel reruns when I was, mm-hmm, a kid. Still pisses me off those aren't available on DVD because they're bastards that way.
Are those not public domain yet?
No, those were done in the 50s. So, yeah.
I'd like to see it.
I think with them, it's a rights issue too. It's that I know there's some serious rights wrangle going on with the Zorro license, with the Zorro, and that's why there was so long between Mask of Zorro and Legend of Zorro.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Zorro is such you talked Wesley the Dread Pirate Roberts. You know, I mean, he owes that swashbuckling thing to Zorro.
Owns the outfit. He owns the outfit
that looks exactly like Zorro. I found that I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zorro, Don Diego de la Vega, and his trusty horse Tornado.
Yep.
Tornado.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love Zorro. I mean,
And Zorro was Batman's inspiration too.
Yep.
You know, so,
mm-hmm,
there you go. There you have it, Zorro.
Excellent.
I decided to put this one up here because I was trying to figure out what to do, and I was watching the third Underworld movie today, so I decided to do Kate Beckinsale's.
I knew she was going to be your number one.
And just that, like, I watched the opening sequence. Just to confirm.
Wait a minute. Oh no, actually no. I was thinking you were going to do Eve from Resident Evil, or Alice, or whatever the fuck her name is.
I should have mentioned her, actually.
She's an honorable mention.
Definitely an honorable mention. But the scene in the beginning of Underworld, the first one, when she jumps off the building, lands, and then just does that badass little, like it was nothing. Like, I just jumped, 30 stories.
Totally watched that, says Zorro.
John.
This guy comes from one of my absolute favorite movies. He's a scientist, he's a surgeon, he's a rock star, he's an adventurer, it's fucking Buckaroo Banzai.
Shit, yeah.
God damn it, yes. Yes, he would be an honorable mention of mine as well. I do love me some Buckaroo Banzai and RoboCop. Same as
Buckaroo Banzai. And I've all, every time I go to a comic book shop, I'm like, where's the Buckaroo Banzai?
Come on, man.
And, you know, you gotta know, what's up with the watermelons? I mean, really. The dude's got the Banzai Institute, watermelons, and every actor that is a cult actor in his entourage. I mean, you know, Jeff Goldblum, Clancy Brown. I mean, the guy who played Mantis, for Christ's sake.
We'll
see down the road the Bambi Bandcast on my part. Peter Wellers will be up for the defense.
Sweet. Hey, nice. Peter Weller is pretty fucking awesome. RoboCop was one of my top movies.
Fucking Weller?
Maybe.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. So, any ideas who my number one is?
Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight.
No.
Batman.
No. Actually, I thought about Batman. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I didn't particularly like Keaton too much. I didn't like Clooney very much. I don't like Kilmer. I don't particularly like Bale too much. I almost threw in Kevin Conroy off of the strength that the Mask of the Phantasm was released in the theaters, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
John McClane.
No, fuck no.
Workshop.
No, far from it. Actually, it's not one that I would imagine that you guys would
guest because I was thinking about it, and I've really done myself a misservice over the course of this show that I've never talked about one of my favorite movies of all time, and I cannot believe it didn't fall in my top six. I don't know how it fell off of my top six, but I am talking
about... Must have been all the mescaline you were doing at the
time. It could have been. It is none other than Sheriff Will Kane from High Noon, Gary Cooper. Cannot love a character more than I love him.
Talk about one of the first anti-heroes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. In High Noon, Will Kane is a town marshal. It is his wedding day, and his last day as a lawman. He's about to leave town with his bride to start a new life. When some men come to town and tell him that he sent to prison some years ago, has just been released, and is arriving on the noon train, Kane and the townsfolk who remember him know that he is coming to town for one reason, to kill Wayne, or Will. Will's friends tell him to leave town, which he does, but Will feels that running away is not the solution and returns to face him. Mm-hmm. Will asks all the people and all of his friends for help. They all tell him no, and he winds up facing them on his own in one of the most spectacular shootouts in film history. The dude is the picture of integrity. I mean, he is the picture of the everyman hero. If I could be any one of these people, it would be Will Kane. I love him. I love that character, and I love that movie, and I hate the fact that I've never talked about it before.
It's a great movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
1952?
Yeah, 1952. Mm-hmm. It's just... And he was also... The Return of Will Kane came out in 1981, I believe it was, and he was played by... I don't remember. Tom Skerritt, and it was awful. Where do you get the nerve to recast Gary Cooper's role as Will Kane? I mean, it is just one of those movies that it's a beautifully perfect movie, mm-hmm. and like the politics behind the movie, A, pissed me off, and B, I don't care because of the fact that it's just such a fantastic movie. It was an anti-communism movie, and it pissed off people like John Wayne, people like Howard Hawks that ended up making Rio Bravo as a response to that movie. And Rio Bravo is just your typical Western bullshit. I mean, it's fun. It's a good movie, but High Noon is just, I love it. I love that movie so much.
Along the same lines, I really liked Outland.
Outland's good, too.
No, it's the High Noon in Outer Space with Sean Connery.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, that's a great movie. It's Peter Hyams, I think, directed that one.
Yeah.
High Noon's a great fucking film.
I love that movie so much.
I wouldn't be surprised.
My father was a big fan of Westerns, and so I've seen a lot of Westerns. They all sort of blur together to a certain extent.
If this one blurred together with anything, there's something wrong with you.
Well, I mean,
Grace Kelly's in that one.
Rodeos.
Grace Kelly.
And fucking...
Probably easily in top six most beautiful women of all time.
Sure the hell is.
God damn it, she was beautiful.
Her and Garbo.
Anyway, got a little distracted.
Jimmy Stewart was in it.
No, that's right. He was.
And so was Lee Van Cleef.
That's right.
It was his first role. He was a non-speaking role. But
Yeah. I remember that now.
I love that movie. So, cool. You seen it, John?
Oh, yeah. Love it. Fun. I'm kind of old-fashioned Western type guy.
Oh, High Noon's a great one.
It's my favorite. Without a doubt, my most favorite Western of all time. So
I guess we spoiled that top six someday.
I don't give a shit because you know what? I'll spoil that one because of the fact I feel so bad for not mentioning this movie before.
That's true.
You know who like honorable mention is, but I could not bring myself to stick him in there, was Sir Thomas More from
The Saint?
Thomas Crown Affair. No, the God damn it, guys, shut up. A Man for All Seasons with Paul Schofield. That's another one of those just like people I would want to be. Just somebody with like that kind of integrity that's just such a badass.
For me, also Errol Flynn, Robin Hood.
Yeah, I thought about throwing him in there,
I was going to put him in. Was like, you know, really, Douglas Fairbanks Zorro is really where it all started, that's where I'm going to have to go with. So.
Yes, sir.
I want to mention the McKenzie brothers from Strange Brew.
I thought about them also, actually. I was kind of wondering if you might actually throw them in there, come to think of it.
I'm not
down.
They're cool. They're awesome. Well, that was a fun top six, guys. We like talking about stuff we like, apparently.
Apparently, yeah.
So cool. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with a Watch This on Torch. And we are back. This time we're going to be doing a Watch This on the many network show of
It's Torchwood.
It's BBC. Well, it's BBC, then BBC Two, then BBC Four, then now on to Starz, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it changed networks every single season it was on. But this is one of Ethan's choices, so once again, I'm going to let him kick this shit off and tell us why we should watch this on Torchwood.
Well, you know, I'm obviously a big fan of Doctor Who, and Aaron and I have waxed philosophically on how awesome Doctor Who is many a time. Torchwood is a spinoff of Doctor Who, and it is sort of the... For a lack of a better comparison, is it's the X-Files, but done well.
I liked X-Files.
X-Files had its moments. This is... you know how X-Files had moments of being awesome and then several episodes of being crap? Well, this is Torchwood is like just having a whole series of just those moments of being awesome. Not only is Captain Jack in it, played by John Barrowman, who is awesome, and I would totally become gay for that man. Captain Jack, Captain Jack is in this, and he's the head of this of Torchwood in Cardiff, and they deal with things that go bump in the night, things that are come through this rift in time and space that is that sort of draws through this area. And they deal with a lot of adult stuff. They deal with a lot of sex. They deal with a lot of death going on. It's a series that I've seen the first two series of, but I haven't steeled myself to watch Children of the Earth yet. And the fourth series is coming online, and it's Torchwood International, basically, is it's going to have some Americans in it, and it's going to be on Starz.
What's that, John?
Bill Pullman's showing the best.
Yes, he is.
Bill Pullman as a pedophile.
That'll be a stretch.
Yes. He has joined it as a pedophile. They've announced a few of the people who have joined the cast.
Going for, like, alternative personality types.
Well, and interesting characters. That's part of what the show really gets into is it has these fascinating characters dealing with these extraordinary circumstances that sort of take a backseat to the characters and what they go through. The thing I like about Torchwood is not only is Captain Jack awesome, but you have these sort of out there Doctor Who-esque...
Miracle Day is the name of the new series.
Miracle Day?
Torchwood Miracle Day.
Alrighty.
Sorry.
Is these sort of Doctor Who-esque out there stories in that, you know, yes, you have this super secret organization called Torchwood that is running around and trying to cover all these things up. But the thing is, they also have these things at their disposal, and they unashamedly will go off and use alien technology to get stuff done that they need to get done, and it will invariably backfire and fuck them over, as it always does.
Wasn't that a Torchwood laser or something? They blew up the Sycorax mothership.
Yes,
list? I thought so. Harry Jones, Prime Minister.
Yes, I know who you are. No, Doctor Who is much more tongue in cheek. It's much more for a younger audience. Torchwood is much more for an older audience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot more adult themes going on in Torchwood. Torchwood has each series about 12, 13 episodes, except for Children of the Earth, which I think is only 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I understand it, it had good ratings in Britain, but it had better ratings on BBC America.
Right.
Which blows my mind because it's a show that would just never be made here.
Right.
When they announced that it was moving, that Fox was going to do Torchwood, I knew that was just a stupid fucking idea. Because part of the intrinsic nature of the show is the... well, the omnisexuality of Captain Jack.
Yeah.
And sort of how his character is. He's a very tormented character. He's immortal. He can't die.
Purely because some girl wanted to make sure that he was around to keep the doctor around.
Right. He can't die, but the thing is, because he can't die, he's been around and he's seen all these people that he loved die.
Sure.
And seen horrors of war numerous times because he's been through World War One. He's been through World War Two twice. He's
World War Three.
He's even been through stuff in the future because he's from the 50th century or something like that.
Oh, 50th century.
He's way in the future. He's part of the. He was a time agent.
Right.
In the second series, James Marsters shows up in the show as another time agent, as Captain. He's Captain Jack Harkness. He's Captain John Harper. And you also come to realize that Captain Jack Harkness, that's not even his real name. And he doesn't tell you what his real name is, and you sort of get more into the interesting intricacies of the character. And how there's this sexual tension between him and the Gwen character, and yet he's totally boinking the Ianto Jones, the male assistant, you know, and it's just he's so unashamed about it. And the thing is, though, he's so embittered over the stuff that he's gone through over the last 100 years, because he's been stuck on Earth since about like the 1880s or something like that. He's seen all of these campaigns, he's done all this stuff. And the interesting thing is, you run into things where he's dealt with things from his past, he's dealt with things from his future now. And the dude just goes through some serious bad shit. The other thing that's great about the show is it's not frightening. It's not scared of killing off characters.
Good. So nobody feels safe.
Yeah, don't feel safe saying, I like this character. Never mind, that character's now dead.
The inverse of Jack being invulnerable. How do you produce attention? Jack's invulnerable. All of these other people are
gone. Yeah, these other people that he has emotional connections to, they are not. It's a real fascinating, fun show. The season finale for the first season is kind of weak, in my opinion. Doctor Who sort of had that problem with occasionally having a season finale that was like, and flop. The season finale of the second season is amazing, so they make up for that. And there is one point in the second series where you're watching it, and about 3 or 4 episodes are going on, and you're like, okay, nothing's really happening, I'm getting kind of bored. If they don't get me with this next episode, then I'm done. And then the next episode hits, and it's like, holy shit. Holy shit. And it's one of those shows that, like I said, it would never be made in America, because it's too free with the sexual content and whatnot. That's why it's on Stars, you know. So I'm like, okay, I can buy. Stars is Stars
just wouldn't be produced here.
Yeah, and I think that part of that why it didn't get picked up by Fox was because of the Russell T. Davies and John Barrowman were refused to compromise on the Captain Jack character.
Not changing.
It's like this. He's a fundamental part of the show. The way he is a fundamental part of the show, and I'm sure. Right after they made those announcements, Fox said, "Oh, we're not interested in the series anymore," because I know they would want to make him a ladies' man or something equally as dumb. Which the thing is, he is a ladies' man, but he's also a man's man. He's also an inanimate objects man. Does it breathe? It's that he's interested. Yeah. If you're used to seeing the character from Doctor Who, and Doctor Who is much more lighthearted than Torchwood, you get to see a lot more of the darker side of the guy. And so,
tortured soul.
Yeah, and it's a really fascinating show. I really enjoy it. I keep saying it, but it's like all the good parts of the X-Files done right, you know?
Yeah. Very dramatic.
Yeah, it's a great show. That's my watch this. You know, watch Torchwood. It's excellent.
You watched it, John?
I watched a little bit of it. I started actually watching it before I saw the character in Dr. Who, Captain Jack. So I kind of was really like, I don't know about this. But what I did really like about the show is they started going from just a series to a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have those 2 episodes. You get a nice, hardcore, jam-packed show.
Right.
And, you know, it's really smart on their part. The only other time I've really kind of seen a show go more to a kind of a compact kind of thing is with Lost. You know, it's so that really just said, you know what, we don't need these story episodes, let's just give more to be a story. And that's what they do with this. They give a really nice, big, broad adventure, and you get these kind of characters that you do right. And it's a rotating cast except for Captain Jack.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer in that the Brits have it right as far as the seasons that they do, because they do six or 12 episode seasons. You know, they don't do 22 episodes where you're going to get filler. I think if they, here in America, we should adopt a similar practice, but it'll never happen.
I agree.
That's why I'm actually very happy that it's gone to Stars, and that it's going to be able to keep its edge, and it's going to be, you know, probably a 10-episode series.
Yeah, that'll be good.
And I think that's exactly what needed to happen with it.
I agree.
Sounds good. So cool. Yeah, I guess that's Watch This on Torchwood. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our outro segment.
So, what do you do for fun?
Me? Oh, I play games.
Oh, I like games.
Whoa, no, I mean tabletop game. You know, with dice and stuff. You know, like D&D.
Measure!
Was it something I said?
Sir, I think you should leave.
Psst. Hey, buddy, don't worry. You'll find a Gamer's Haven around the corner.
The Gamer's Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com.
And we are back with our outro segment. This week we did do a We Make It on the Fantastic Four reboot. We had a lot of interesting conversations there. Following that up, we did do a top six of our favorite movie heroes of all time. And then we just wrapped it up with a Watch This of the Torchwood. So it's been a good and interesting show. It was nice having John on this time around. Ethan, I believe
always,
you wanted to...
Always a pleasure, John.
Always a pleasure. I do believe that you wanted to do a pimping.
Yes. As anyone who's listened to the show knows, I organize a gaming convention here in Kansas City called CantCon. CantCon has officially been booked for July 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center. And if you go to CantCon.com, that's with a K, so K-A-N-T-C-O-N.com, you can hit our Kickstarter up if you want to back a local convention by local gamers for local people. You can. It's a pre-registration that's going on. If you do that, you can go to our website, go to the Kickstarter, and use that as a pre-registration method. If we hit our $2,000 goal bought in the next 90 days, then those people who use that system will be able to get some really cool new swag, like beer mugs, some exclusive custom dice we're going to have made, and various things. Even in the higher tiers, the highest tier, in fact, my friend Tracy is putting his very skin on the line. Putting his very skin on the line, if someone pledges $500 to CantCon, they will get to choose his next tattoo.
Sweet.
So
no matter what?
There are a few caveats to it because he is going into teaching. He gets to choose where it is.
I was going
to
say, I'm going to do a dick on his face.
And it has to be gaming related.
Okay.
Yeah. So yes, he's putting his own skin on the line for CantCon. Got to appreciate that.
You got a lot.
Some custom dice bags coming out. Like I said, it's a pre-registration method. Going to be able to get some several raffle tickets for when you attend the show. And even if you're not attending the show, if you want to support local owned a local convention, that
I'm sure there's a way of donating tickets, right?
Mm-hmm. Of donating.
Like to
Yeah. You can just go pledge X amount of dollars.
Sure.
And not actually choose one of the tiers.
Fine. Excellent.
And that's CantCon, CantCon.com.
So you're buying your own ticket as well.
I am buying my own ticket.
Yes. Always does.
Mm-hmm. Send me that information forward to the Bank and Bank Cast. We'd love to support you guys.
Cool.
We'll do.
There's a thing I noticed that GenCon is doing in their latest newsletter that said it was really successful was the very important gamer program, basically the $500 ticket.
Yeah.
If you did something similar, it's just a
we thought about it. We don't have the staff for it right now, but it is an idea we're thinking of implementing having a minion, a con minion.
Oh, okay.
It's like if you pledge a certain amount, eventually you would get a con minion.
Oh, my goodness.
Shit, I'd offer myself up as a con minion.
Right this way, sir.
But yeah, that has been issue number 41. Next week, we are going to be getting back into the swing of things with a casting couch on the Kingdom Come graphic novel. Players to be determined at a later point. After that, we're going to be doing a characterization segment on Pennywise the Clown from Stephen King's It. And then we're going to be wrapping all that stuff up with a Confessions of a Movie Snob on the direct-to-video It's a Trap, the Family Guy Star Wars iteration of Return of the Jedi. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I especially looking forward to see Shay act like a little bitch because of the clown from It. You're such a weirdo. What's happening on the Magnum Boardcast on Sunday? Do we know that yet, John?
Sunday is a look-back episode. We're taking a different look. We're grabbing so many books that came out in the month of January and discussing it. Our movie fixes the American version of What the White Women Let Me In.
Cool.
And just want to throw this out there. Old Superman for Kingdom Come. Bruce Campbell.
Hey.
He kind of looked the part.
Yeah.
He kind of looks the part. Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
Bruce fucking Campbell, by the way.
Bruce fucking Campbell.
I'm just seeing his character from Burn Notice right now. That would just be funny.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that.
Superman drinking a beer. Yeah, that's right.
I could see that.
You putting your head down in the microphone is what Chris and I get Paul to do every episode.
Awesome.
That's what I'm putting his head down. So.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, that has been issue number 41. I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Sure.
I'm John.
Let your geek flag fly.